Please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and New York Times best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Open your workbooks and welcome to Cash Flow Planning, the nuts and bolts of budgeting, the stuff we all love to hate. We're going to talk about the dreaded B word, the budget. Ooh. Yeah, we're going to have a good time with it, though. See, the fun thing about money is if you will happen to your money, then you have some. If you just let all your money happen to you, you'll never win. See, all a budget is what Zig Ziglar says. Zig Ziglar says, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. And most people with their money, you know what they're aiming at? Nothing. They didn't aim at anything. They just went, right? That doesn't work. No. And you know, John Maxwell, his definition of a budget is excellent. I wish I had said it, but sadly he said it. He said that a budget is people telling their money what to do instead of wondering where it went. So here's the deal. You've got to tell your money what to do. You've got to make it behave. Otherwise, you'll wake up in April, you'll wake up 20 years from now, you'll wake up six decades from now, and you go, wow, I could have had a V8. I've been through all this money and I wonder where it went. Because you see, money has this principle to it. Money is active. It is moving all the time. It has a current to it. That's why they call it currency. It's going everywhere, right? And so if you don't get on top of that money, if you don't make it behave, you will always wonder where it went. You will either tell your money what to do, or the lack of it will always manage you. Stephen Covey says in the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that highly effective people are proactive. They happen to things. Everything doesn't happen to them. And, you know, Rick Warren would say that we're intentional. You have to be intentional about what you're doing with money in order to be able to win with it. You must do the written cash flow plan every single month. Jesus said it in the Bible. He said, don't build a tower without first counting the cost, lest you get halfway up and you're unable to finish. And all who see you begin to mock you and say, this man began to build and was unable to finish. You would never build a tower without a plan. Don't run your life without a plan. See, think about it. The average person in America today makes about $40,000 a year, according to the Census Bureau. 10 years of $40,000 a year is $400,000. If you're going to have $400,000 run through your fingers, you need a plan. If you were going to build a $400,000 home, you wouldn't dream of doing that by just saying, you know, I think we'll just put it over there. Instead, you would have a plan. And we'd call that plan what? We'd call it a blueprint, right? And you know, blueprints don't have one page. It's not a little juvenile picture of the thing. It's got page after page after page after page. It's got the elevation on here. It's got the bushes on here. It's got where every plug goes. It's got where every drain is in the house, every piece of plumbing, what type of trim wear is going to be in there, what type of carpet or hardwood is going to be in each room. Every little detail is laid out in this big, thick book called your house before you ever put a bulldozer on the lot. Before you ever start, everything is planned when you're doing a $400,000 project. And yet we let $400,000 run through our hands in a given 5 or 10 year period of time, and we go, whoa, where'd it go? I have no idea where it went. I feel so inept. Why are you so inept? This isn't rocket science. You've just got to do it. You got to have a blueprint. You've got to have a game plan. You would never build a $400,000 house by doing that. You see, what we're talking about is if you ran a company called You Incorporated and you manage money for You Incorporated the way you manage money for you now, would you fire you? Don't answer that. That's a little scary, isn't it? You know, well, Dave, I don't know, man. This is intimidating. Yes, it's intimidating. So is being broke. So is being out of control and not knowing where I'm going. That's intimidating, too. So when you happen to this stuff, you're not going to do it perfectly. You know, your budget is not going to work. Say, it's not going to work. The first time you sit down with your spouse and that nerd and that free spirit get together and we have a budget committee meeting and we lay it all out, you know, the first month you're going to have 17 emergency budget committee meetings to do corrections. The next month you're going to have 12 emergency budget committee meetings to do corrections. The next month you're going to have about 3 or 4. It takes 3 months of doing this to get it right. If you do it right over and over and over again, finally after doing it for about 90 days, you start to get what's known as a clue. Say 90 days.
90 days.
It's going to take you 90 days. Your first month's going to be a disaster. And your first budget committee meeting's probably going to be a big fight unless you're very, very careful with your relationship. Because it's going to bring out a bunch of stuff that you've not dealt with in a long, long time. And you're going to have to look that demon straight in the face. And I'm not talking about your spouse. And you're going to have to deal with what's going on there in a very, very real way. Because, you know, this is a process where it's a little bit of trial and error. You're going to get in there and figure out what your deal is and how you guys want to do it, because your value system is going to be reflected here. You are going to put your personal stamp on this. But it's like Mama used to say, right? Practice makes
perfect.
See, and that's the deal with the budget. First month's going to be a little rough. Second month will be a little better. Third month, it'll actually start to work a little bit. But by the time you've been doing it 15 or 20 or 30 years, like Sharon and I have, where after we went broke, we have never lived without a written plan again, because we discovered that was the only way we weren't going to kill each other. We had to have a plan, because we were fighting. I mean, you can have some money fights. We didn't get a divorce, you know. We held on to each other, but sometimes it was just to get a better grip. You know, she's from the hills of East Tennessee. Frying pan throwing there is an Olympic event. You know, so we had to use this plan to be able to talk things out, to be on a game plan. And then when we would lock it in, we'd go, okay, that's what we're doing with money. And then it was okay for her to go spend that and not feel guilty. It was okay for me to go over here. I wasn't going to get yelled at for doing this. And all of a sudden, we had a game plan where this worked. But it was trial and error. You're not immediate, okay, I've been to a class and now I'm an expert. It doesn't work that way, does it? It's kind of like the first time we went snow skiing. Any of you snow ski? Yeah, a few of you. You know, first time we went snow skiing, I'd never been snow skiing. We went a long, long time ago. First time we made some money before we went broke, right? And I called up the travel agent and I said, hey, I've never been snow skiing. I want to go snow skiing. And I hear cool people go snow skiing. So what do the cool people do when they go snow skiing? Where do they go? And she said, well, they might go to Aspen or Vail. And I said, well, let's just go to Aspen. That sounds cool. So book me. What do cool people do when they go to Aspen? She said, well, you book a condo right on the slopes. You don't have to walk anywhere. You just ski in, ski out of the condo. That's what okay, book me a cool people condo then. So I'm cool people. I have no idea what I'm doing. No clue. We get over there. We're checking in our skis at the place. And the guy says, so where are you staying? And we told him. And he said, well, you just told me you're a beginner. And we said, yeah. And he started laughing. He said, you're not skiing in and out of that condo. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you're at the bottom of a double black diamond mountain. He said, you might roll in there, but you're not skiing in there. And so we're sitting there at the bottom of this perfect ski mountain, have no idea how to use it. And so we have to go get on the bus, which I don't think the cool people do. Go down the road a few miles to Buttermilk Mountain. True story. I don't think it just didn't sound as cool as Aspen, you know, Buttermilk Mountain. It was a real mountain, though, I can tell you this. I mean, we were on the bunny slope, and that's a big bunny. And you trial and error, right? And you know about the bunny slope. You know how that works. When you're learning to ski, bunny slope has nothing to do with learning to ski. It's learning to ride the chairlift. You know, you get to fall and blah, 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 blah. So we get out there, we successfully get in the thing. You know, you move over there and the chairlift hits you. Boom. You know, we're riding up through there. We're going, okay, we both got on here. We have all of our equipment, which is not like those other people, because you see equipment dotted all the way down. You know what I'm talking about. And we're coming up on the top. I'm going, okay, we're good. I'm kind of relaxing a little bit. And then I look up at the top and there's a problem developing at the top of the hill, because as the people were getting off the lift, they were just kind of piling up. And I said, okay, honey, we got to have a plan. You go around to the right. Since you're on the right, I'll cut in to the left. We're going to miss the pile. We're not going to get in this. And tips up, because you don't want to hit and just go bloom, you know, right? And so tips up, okay. I go around left. I cut hard left, and I stop. She goes around right. She hadn't stopped yet. She forgot about the stopping part. She just pointed them. And I can't help her. I'm just telling the instructor, my wife left. He said, well, she'll stop before she hits the restaurant. Most of them do, because she's like heading right at it. You know, it looks like a movie, you know? Well, that's how we started. And we've been skiing for years now. We take our kids as big family vacations. Now we can ski the Double Black Diamonds and all that stuff. But that was a couple decades ago. But we didn't start out on Double Black Diamond, did we? Same thing with your budget. You didn't start out there. You're going to have a little trial and error. And just give yourself a little grace to fall down a couple times and learn the process. You must also keep your checkbook balanced, your checking account balanced. And I'm amazed at people that don't know how to do this. And I guess I don't want to shame you, and I don't want you to feel guilty for not knowing how to do it, but I want to push you hard enough. If you're not keeping your checkbook reconciled, your checking account reconciled with what's actually happening at the bank, within 72 hours of you receiving the statement, you've got a system broken in your money. People just pile these things up. They go, well, I do it about once a year. And they can't figure out why they have no clue about their money. If you handled money for you Incorporated the way you handle money for you now, would you fire you? Don't answer that. Okay? And so the deal is you've got to step in there and say, we're going to keep this thing reconciled. If you don't know how, just go to our online resources. We've got a whole page there that'll lay out step by step by step. No shame involved. The only shame will be if you go another 3 days and you still don't know how. So do it right now. Learn how to do this. And don't do it the way one old boy did. He came into our office for counseling. We're going down the list of stuff. And his account kept balancing, but yet it was out of balance. And we couldn't figure it out. And we said, the only one we can't figure out is this entry here for ESP. What's ESP? He said, error someplace. Do not use that method to keep your checking account reconciled. You see, really, overdrafts are a sign of crisis living, aren't they? And sloppy, lazy money habits. Because this is sixth grade math, keeping a checkbook. It's just a matter of doing the stuff. I mean, you know, the average millionaire can't tell you what's happening on the average TV show, but their checking account's balanced. But don't tell me you know everything about the latest television craze and you don't have a clue about your own life. Throw a brick through your television, all right? And go get you a clue. Spend a few hours a month actually working on your life so you get to win. That's an idea. And you know, automatic overdraft loans now, here's the deal. This year, according to the Center for Responsibility Lending, $10.3 billion in fees charged to Americans this year on overdraft situations. Absolutely out of control stuff. It's a huge profit center for the banking industry. They are feeding off of the American public's incompetence. It's absolutely crazy. And you can use the duplicating or duplicate type checks if necessary. If you're writing checks and you forget to write them down, at least you get home and you got that little, you know, NCR copy back there that you can look at and you can keep up with them that way. A lot of people aren't using checks nearly as much as they used to. But if that's a problem for you, use the duplicate situation. If not managed and made to behave, the ATM card and the debit card are also certain to become budget busters. I've met many people who didn't have a big credit card problem, but they were $20 themselves to death with the ATM, and there was no management of it. It was completely out of control. Now, I don't make you cut up your ATM card, and I'm certainly not against the debit card. I have two of those in my wallet right now, one for my business and one for my personal account. And we'll talk about that in the debt lesson quite a bit. But the deal is simply this. You have to make your money behave. Whether it's checks, whether it's debit cards, whether it's ATM, whatever's going on, you have to be proactive in these situations. Now, reasons we don't want to do a cash flow plan. Most people hate the word budget because it has a straitjacket connotation. If we had told you tonight we're going to teach the budget lesson, nobody would have come. It's like going to get a root canal. I don't want to do a budget. A budget feels like I'm constricted. I can't do anything. I won't be able to order a pizza. I won't be able to buy what I want to buy. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means you have a plan. Second reason people don't want to do a budget is a budget has been used to abuse them. Their parents or maybe their control freak nerd spouse has been twisting their arm with the budget. It's not in 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 the budget. Well, listen, if you're in here and you're an adult, well, you have a vote. And if it's not in the budget, you can put it in the budget because you're part of the voting process in the budget committee meeting. So put it together and put it in the budget. And then if together we decided it's not in the budget, that means we've learned a new word. No. It's an ancient word. It's actually been pulled from political correctness completely out of our society. You're not allowed to tell anyone no for any reason ever, including your kids. No is a word that is no longer allowed to use in our culture. It's gotten complete. Isn't it funny? Let's practice it. You push your tongue, because nobody uses it. We have to practice it. Push your tongue towards the roof of your mouth. You release air, make a kissing motion with your lips. No. Ooh, it's freeing, isn't it? Sometimes you have to tell yourself,
no.
So later you could tell yourself,
yes.
Hey, that's living like no one else. So later I can. See, that's how that works. It's sacrificing to win. That's not abuse. Now, another reason we don't like to do a budget is we never had one that really worked. We tried the old yellow pad budget, you know. We're going to add it all up. We're only going to eat every other week. You remember that. I remember when we were broke, Sharon, when I would go to work, she would make my sandwiches. And I still a lot of times take food to work because I don't like to go out to eat. I don't want to fool with it. I'm a time nut. I want to get better use of the time. Plus, I eat with my team and that kind of a thing. And so it's not unusual at all for me to pack my lunch. But I'll tell you what I don't eat. I don't eat tuna fish. Because when we were broke, she always packed me a tuna fish sandwich. So when I smell tuna fish, I feel broke. I know it's frou-frou and it's cool and it's good for weight loss. It touches my emotions way down deep. So I can't eat tuna fish. It takes me back places I don't want to go. Another reason we don't want to do a budget is paralysis from fear of what we'll find. That's called denial. You look at the bill drawer and you go, ooh, there's gremlins in there. If I open that, they'll get out. I'm afraid to stick my hand down in there. Something will gnaw it off. I'm afraid if I write everything down, I'll freak out because it's really bad. Well, guess what? That means it's probably really bad. And you're going to really freak out when they take your house. So you need to write it down, okay? Yes, there's going to be some things you're not going to want to face when you see it. But I tell you what, it's easier to face them and cleanse the wound and let it heal than it is just let it continue to be infected. And so face that fear. Do it. A lot of times when people add up their budget and stuff and add up their bills, particularly if you're behind on your bills, it's not nearly as bad as you thought it was when you write it all down. You go, oh, it was just a stack of old bills. There's really only one due. We'll throw all the late ones away, and this is the one. You know? Because it's got all of it on there anyway, right? I mean, it's not like those others mattered. We weren't going to pay back there. This is just the one we got to deal with. So, you know, and so sometimes a big box of stuff turns into a little stack of stuff like this if you get organized and lay it all out. That is the best way to do it. You know, one guy, he was doing his budget and laid everything out, and he was a little bit afraid of what he was going to find, and he was in Financial Peace University. I was sitting there talking to him. He's kind of a good old boy guy, you know, and he says, yeah, Dave, he said, when we added it all up, so we looked at our past few months, we've been eating out too much. I said, what do you mean you've been eating out too much? He said, we've been eating out too much. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we added it all up. We've been spending about $1,200 a month on restaurants. I went, whoa, just what you're saying. He said, yeah, I figured out why I didn't have a retirement. I've been eating it. So sometimes it's good things that you find. You can now make positive choices and go, hey, that isn't really who I want to be when I grow up. Cash flow plans do not work because you leave things out. That's why we're going to go through a whole budgeting system here because it's a checklist of little things that sometimes will sneak up on you and you forget about. You forget about soccer pictures. You know, you forget that cars break down, car repairs. You forget about these things. And if you go through a little checklist, you'll go, oh, that. And then when you start adding it up, you get a more realistic picture. When your budget is not realistic, when it's just a wet finger in the air, then that's when you have crashes in your budget and you're going to end up with a lot more emergency budget committee meetings. Cash flow plans don't work if you overcomplicate your plan. If the nerd goes into steroid overdrive and the budget is 66 pages long and it takes a master's degree in business, an MBA, to understand your budget, no one's going to live on that in our busy, busy culture, our go-go culture. You're not going to do that. You have to keep your life simple enough in this busy world with the budgeting so that you actually do it. That's the trick. Because that's the other reason they don't work, is people don't do a budget. You see, a budget won't work if you don't do a budget. This is not hard. And we need to do a different budget every month. We're going to start and spend this coming month's money on paper before the month begins. Every month, do a different set of forms. Forever. Now, eventually you'll get to where the kinks are worked out and it'll be pretty smooth, and most of that is repetition. But for the first few months of doing this, for the practice and to build the muscle in your character, do the details. Do lots and lots and lots of little details for those 3 months in particular while you're in Financial Peace University. So do the budget. And then a budget won't really work if you don't actually live on it. So you can do it and it's all theory and you didn't get anywhere. You actually have to live on the budget. On paper, on purpose, you write it all out. You got a game plan with your spouse. You pinky swear and spit shake. The nerd and the free spirit are together. We're walking forward. And then you just go do something that had nothing to do with what was written down. You actually have to do what you wrote down. You can't spend any money ever again except what you wrote down. And if you don't like what you wrote down, you know whose fault that is? Yours. So change it. If you want to change it, it's yours. Change it. But change it if you're married with your spouse. Because if you go home and go, honey, look what I did. That's not the rules. Okay? We're going to do this together.